Thank you for choosing Flyin' MMA. This episode is one of many podcast episodes from Flyin' MMA that is brought to you by Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of MMA, raising affordable and healthy bulldogs for the last 30 years. Look them up on Twitter at UniqueKennels71 and also on the old Instagram, instagram.com/UniqueKennels. If you haven't had your daily dose of cute, go there to get that in right now. Unique Kennels not only supports this podcast, but they also support local fighters, promotions, and other forms of MMA media.
Hey, fight fans, welcome to the first edition of the Flying Squad Recap with Doc Robbins, Flying Brian, and eventually Fred Kirby. You guys have heard the Flying Brian show with best fight picks, and Brian, you were nice enough to bring me aboard, make me part of the Flying Squad so we can start doing a nice, relaxed recap after good events, right?
That is right. Actually, Doc Robbins, I asked Stan and Bang to join this thing for Fred Kirby, so pretty sad that he's not here today, but I guess I got a consolation prize with you.
Oh, well, yeah, I do my best. Fred is definitely the star of Stand and Bang, but I do what I can. So thanks a lot for throwing me under the bus. Fred is actually out right now at a kind of a art show, comic book convention thing, I think is what I gathered from him. But he had not seen the fights. So fuck him for tonight. And we're going to go ahead and break down UFC on Fox 16 or UFC Chicago. And the main event there was Dillashaw versus Barao 2, the rematch that we've been waiting 14 months to see. So I think if it's all right with you, Brian, I'm just going to start at the early prelims and we can work our way to the awesome main event.
That sounds great to me as well. Of course, I was just kidding about rather having Fred than you, but you guys give each other a lot of witty banter and smack talk that I find really amusing, so I thought I would join in on that.
Yeah, and now for fans who are listening, that is the last time that Brian is going to explain that. I've told Brian I understand that. So sarcasm, smack talk, Brian, just give it. I know that you're kidding, and so we're going to fuck with each other. This is going to be fun. So we're going to start at the beginning with Zach Cummings versus Dominic Steele, which sounds like two disgusting porn stars getting ready to fight. I don't exactly know if Silva was making a little joke when he's like, Cummings and Steele. And you were telling me that Dominic Steele actually has a nickname. What is it?
Well, I told you that it's Mandingo, but that's completely false. His real nickname is Nonstop Action Packed Dom T.
That also kind of sounds half pornish. But anyways, in this we had Zach Cummings, right? He had a long layoff. He was one of the guys that used to be on The Ultimate Fighter. And then Dominic Steele was making his debut. Some of these guys making their debut, I think that they give them a little bit too much, and that's going to come up later here in a couple of fights. But going into this fight, I know that you do a predictions show. What was your prediction on this one?
I actually predicted nearly exactly what happened. I did the film study on both of these guys. Of course, we're familiar with Zach Cummins, but Dominic Steele in his non-UFC career, I didn't see him use one second worth of head movement, and Zach Cummings hits really hard. That is a recipe for putting somebody out early.
Yeah, and that is exactly what happened. It didn't look like Dominic got his rhythm at all, and Zach looked like he was game tonight. He looked like he was ready to do it, and after that first straight left, they could have stopped the fight right then. I mean, Dominic Steele just folded like cheap lawn furniture. And that was the end of it. I always kind of get a kick out of guys who get knocked out hilariously. and not, you know, nothing against Mr. Steele, but that actually was kind of like when they slowed it down and he had that 1,000-yard stare after the left punch. That was a little bit hilarious. So I don't know. Do you have anything left to say about that one? I think we're going to zoom through these early prelims pretty quick to get to the better fights.
Yeah, I think one thing I want to say is I think the best guy ever at getting knocked out might be Charlie Brenneman.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was somewhere in his contract that during every fight he had to get knocked out hilariously.
Yeah, other than that, yeah, I'm good on that fight.
All right, and then so that brings us to the next fight, which is actually going to go down in infamy, not because it was good or bad, but because, ding, 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 we had our first official UFC nip slip. Thank you, Reebok, for making such shitty gear for these people that somebody's titty actually fell out not once but twice. Poor Elizabeth Phillips immediately became a Twitter and internet star when it was revealed on still shots that Jessamyn Duke had not only revealed her nipple not only once, But twice. Now, Brian, I got to ask you this because we just talked about this off air. Did you notice that when you were watching the fights?
You know, my eyes aren't that fast. I've got glasses on. So with my glasses, I've got 20/20 vision and I still miss that.
I missed it too. And I watch fights very intently. Do you know what else I missed? Angela Magana peeing her pants in an event not that long ago. What I want to ask is, who in the hell is the pervert watching these fights so closely that they see urine spray out of a fighter and they catch a millisecond worth of a nipple? Which, honestly, we're all adults. Did you really care that you saw Elizabeth Phillips' nipple? Like, it's definitely not something that I was hoping for my entire life to see. But either way, this fight just sucked. It was two girls that should be in Invicta, in my opinion, and you can feel free to agree or disagree. Jessamyn Duke has shown time and time again, as a matter of fact, all the horse women besides Ronda Rousey have shown that they're just terrible fucking fighters, and Jessamyn did not disappoint on that. And Elizabeth looked game. They both looked terrible. And then in the third round, I'm pretty sure that Elizabeth had a cardiac arrest at some point in there.
Well, yeah, when Joe Rogan went to interview her, she looked like she was about to fall asleep. But for the fight, for me, it was a little more exciting than I anticipated it was going to be. Jessamyn Duke, she has one of the longest reaches for a lady that weighs 135 pounds that I've ever seen in my life. But she doesn't use that at all. And, you know, she doesn't fire with intensity. She doesn't fire with volume. And Elizabeth Phillips, I actually watched these two ladies fight one time in Kearney, Nebraska. And Jessamyn Duke won with a guillotine choke. I picked Elizabeth Phillips just because she was the favorite in Vegas. I thought that was what was going to happen, when she was going to win by decision, and that was right. But yeah, the fight, I thought it was going to be terrible, and it was mediocre instead.
All right, I guess I can go with mediocre. It's definitely not the worst fight that I saw. And of course, like I said, we had our first official nip slip, which actually doesn't make me like Reebok any better. It's just time and time again now they are showing they just don't know what the hell they're doing. And so we'll get to talk about Stitch and the other bullshit that's going on, because I saw a tweet from Dana White about Joe Rogan and his Onnit shirt as well. And so the Reebok thing just keeps on trucking and keeps on pissing me off. So let's go ahead and move on to another fight that's going to be noteworthy just because of the decision. We had Ramzi Nijem versus Andrew Holberg. Now, while Ramzi Nijem has about 10 fights in the UFC, this was Andrew Holbrook's debut, and it was pretty much clear to me that Ramzi Nijem fought a blowout to me. Like, there was no question for me that this was either going to be 30-27 unanimous decision or a 29-28 unanimous decision for Ramzi Nijem, and somehow or another, it was a split decision that went to Holbrook. Brian, can you wrap your mind around what the hell you saw?
Dude, I really can't wrap my mind around that. I thought for sure, easy Nijem decision, chalk it up on my UFC pick'em, let's move on to the next fight. Somehow Holbrook gets the split. To me, this was the only fight or the only decision on this card that was shitty. There was a few others that people on the Twitter thought were shitty, but this was the only one that was shitty in my mind. Holbrook, maybe he won in some judges' eyes because he had probably 10 submission attempts, but yeah, for my money, Ramzi Nijem won that fight.
No, there's absolutely no doubt. We have the judges, Brian Pusillo, Kevin Caldwell, and Rick Winner. Now, these are not names I'm familiar with. Are you? Because these are not names that I'm used to seeing as judges.
I've never heard those names before.
Okay, so I don't know where they found these fuckers. But there was some bad judging tonight. And Kelvin Caldwell and Rick Winner somehow saw the fight for Andrew Holbrook. So my guess is they were college roommates. That's the only way I can bring it to light, is that there was some home cooking in there, which I really hate when that kind of shit happens, Brian, because Ramzi Nijem is actually the first guy to give Beneil Dariush a loss in the UFC, and he was on quite like a momentum swing. So to have a newcomer be the one who hands you that loss, that just really skews the rankings. And what did we see out of Andrew Holbrook that said he deserves to be in the UFC or that he deserved the win? I really would have liked to see Ramzi pull this one out.
Well, one thing that I think goes on Holbrook's side in this one is, he wasn't he on short notice? The same thing with Dominique Steele. So if he were to have a full fight camp and then fight Ramzi Nijem again, I think that he'd probably beat him without controversy, but he was coming in on, I want to say, 14 days notice. So to come in on that short notice and put up a questionable decision, I mean, that's pretty decent.
Yeah, I thought they said he found out about the fight June 29th.
All right, so like a whole month.
A month. So he had a four-week camp. I mean, that's not really, like, I consider short notice, like, he's coming in on 9 days' notice. You know, then you were all fat and fucking around and drinking beer, and they wanted you to cut weight and everything like that. This guy obviously came in shape. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just more impressed with Ramzi Nijem than you are. I'm not sure. So let's just throw that one in the toilet and go ahead over to Cruikshank versus Kraus. Now, Darren Cruikshank, the Detroit superstar. Wow. So we're talking about a guy who used to at least show up on main event cards, you know, like the actual big boy card, and then found his way down to the prelims. And now they're this is almost like a kindergarten graduation. They are what do they call that? Highlighting the early fight pass prelim card, which is pretty ridiculous that they actually call this like a high, you know, a highlight. And for this one, in my opinion, this was do or die for either of these guys. And James Kraus pulled it out and submitted Darren Cruikshank in rather quick fashion. Is that
super fast? Super fast.
3 minutes and 30 seconds. Darren Cruikshank didn't get off any of his flashy striking. Kraus was having none of it, and he choked him out immediately after taking the back.
It was actually at 127 of the first round.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, so 90 seconds, just under 90 seconds, James Kraus put away Darren Cruikshank. When I do the Flying with Best Fight Picks podcast, I sometimes pick against Best Fight Picks, or Daniel Levy, mm-hmm. and I did so with conviction on this one. I said, dude, James Kraus has nothing but a jab. Darren Cruikshank is going to put him to school, right? Wrong. James Kraus jabbed Darren Cruikshank like 25 times, took him down, choked him out. Easy peasy.
It was like he had no ground defense whatsoever. And I apologize for getting the time wrong, but that is coming directly from the official UFC website. So
no way.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Reebok's fucking up. UFC's fucking up. I'm fucking up. Why not? Let's just keep it a whole just a fuck show. So, all right. I'm all done with the early prelims, except to ask you, do you think this is the last time we see Darren Cruikshank in the UFC?
Okay, so that was two losses in a row, but he had a no contest versus KJ Nunes. So he probably gets one more.
That's right. He's coming off of the eye injury with KJ Nunes. And yeah, right now he's no contest with KJ Nunes. Prior to that, he had one against Anthony Njikawani. And then now he's dropped one to Beneil Dariush and one to James Kraus. Now, the one to Dariush, we're starting to see maybe not that surprising because he's starting to find his rhythm and starting to emerge as a fighter. But James Kraus is one of those guys that if you're losing to James Kraus, that's not a good sign. I mean, no offense to James Kraus, but, you know, like I said, this was probably a do or die for either one of these guys. So let's go ahead and move on to the Fox prelims. Now, when Brian Caraway versus Eddie Wineland was announced, Brian, my initial reaction was, what do you mean, Eddie Wineland still fights?
Yeah.
Okay. And then my other reaction is, what do you mean, Brian Caraway still fights? This was one of those matches where I'm just like, does Brian Caraway get to fight just because Miesha Tate says so? You know what I mean? Like, this guy for me is like, okay, fine. He's got some skills on the ground, right? That's his claim to fame. But his striking is less than rudimentary. And then Wineland, the owner of two broken jaws, comes into this one, obviously too emotional. And I don't know if you noticed this, but he was coming up short on every single strike.
Yeah, on all of them. He might have tagged him like a total of five times with good shots.
Yeah, I mean, it was really bad. I mean, the statistics say more than that, but he was missing for every three that he missed, he may have hit him with one, and he wasn't hitting him with conviction. And so you have Brian Caraway, who is arguably one of the worst strikers in the UFC, who actually outstruck Eddie Wineland to go to a disgusting, boring-ass decision. So, and then I think, now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but they bleeped out something right after the fight when Brian Caraway won. I think he screamed the word pussy.
What?
I'm pretty sure he was, and he wasn't looking at Eddie Wineland, and it looked like they were okay, but I'm pretty sure he said pussy. So I think that he was celebrating the fact that Misha actually has to give him some when he wins a fight.
Oh yeah, that's probably true, but he had to wait until a little later on this card to find out if he was actually going to get some. What if later on this card she loses, she's upset, maybe she gets hurt real bad by Jessica Ai. So he celebrated a little too early there.
Yeah, definitely, because we all know in that relationship, Misha Tate wears the pants and has the penis.
Well, what do you think about you're in the same weight class as your girlfriend, wife, whatever she is, and she's more successful at it than you?
You know, for me, I'm fine with that. Except for if I was Brian Caraway, I would probably just kind of step into obscurity and just help her train and just be like, yep, she's the star. And then make people wonder how I'm getting in her pants. I'm that kind of guy. Like when you walk into a room and your girlfriend is way out of your league and the people are just kind of left to wonder, how in the fuck is that right? And then you just kind of smile and nod and, you know, wink at them a little bit and be like, yeah, figure it out on your own. I'm not telling you. I'd be that guy because Brian Caraway, neither one of these guys, let's be honest, no shot at being top five.
Yes. Well, didn't Brian Caraway, he had a pretty close fight with Rafael Assuncao. I mean, he did lose, but so he's top 10, right?
I think he's top 10, but we're not talking about guys who are going to be champions ever in the history of never. Eddie Wineland was the inaugural WEC champion at that weight class, but now the WEC is gone. Now you have to fight with the, you know, real fighters. So no, Eddie Wineland isn't going anywhere. My guess is that he announces his retirement after this fight.
Yeah, he was talking about retirement before this fight, so if he doesn't, I'd be really shocked.
Yeah, I think he's all done. So, you know, congratulations, Mr. Tate. Good job. Hope you get laid tonight. And that moves us on to Robertson versus Saunders. Now, I think this is one where you and I had a different opinion, right? Because I actually did have Ben Saunders winning this fight. Now, in no way, shape, or form was this a robbery. It was a split decision that went Saunders' way, 28-29. Now, what I saw out of Ben Saunders is this guy has so much potential. It's just like he's not at the right camp or he doesn't have the right coaches. Because on the ground, he is sick. That, you know, Mission Control and Eddie Bravo being in his corner and the way that he threatens with submissions and busts people up with his elbows, it just seems to me that Ben Saunders could be that guy. And then I see Kenny Robertson and I'm like, no. How did you make it into the UFC?
He's a very basic looking guy, but his skills are pretty well rounded. He was a Division I wrestler. He's got some decent striking. Most of his wins are by submission, I'm pretty sure. So, you know, he's believable to be there.
Yeah, you know, but it's just one of those guys for me, and I'm biased. So I just look at him, and every time I see Kenny Robertson, I'm like, did they just pick this fucking guy out of the crowd? I don't know if it's his strange striking, because you have to admit he has an awkward striking style. He doesn't extend his arms all the way. He does a lot of arm punching. You know, he doesn't follow through with his strikes, and it's just surprising to me that he can generate that much force. Now, the second round was all his, for sure. And then except for one good punch in the first round, I had it first round Saunders, third round Saunders, because in the third round, obviously, he pulled guard on Robertson, put him in mission control, busted up the side of his head with elbows, and was threatening with either an arm in triangle or could have gone to a straight arm bar for the entire round, more or less. So how is it that you saw Kenny Robertson winning that fight?
Basically because Robertson hurt Saunders in that first round. I mean, sure, you could put a bunch of strikes on a guy, but if you get hurt by that same guy in a round, I'd give that round to Robertson. And also, I was kind of emotionally cheering for Ben Saunders. I know it's stupid, but Ben Saunders told me that he liked my logo on the Twitter the other day, so I was cheering for him real hard. And so, you know, maybe I put a little extra pressure on him, and I thought that he was going to lose. And then when it was announced that he won, I was just ecstatic about that.
You know, that's actually not stupid at all. I'll tell you a little anecdotal story. we have a mutual follower on Twitter, Temri Morgan. She's the Cutmaster. She's the female cut person. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Shit. If she's my follower, I'm I'm sorry, I've never heard of her.
Well, I think she's one of the Team MMA for Life people. It doesn't matter. It's over on Twitter. Her name is Temri Morgan. She's a female cut person. She was in Oklahoma yesterday with, I can't remember the organization, but Herb Dean was there and Anthony Johnson was there. And Houston Alexander was the headliner, even though he lost to Kryptonite Lopez, I think his name is. But anyways, we go back and forth on Twitter all the time, and she listens to Stand and Bang, and she watches Keyboard Warriors because she thinks it's funny. And she asked Anthony Johnson, Rumble, if he would be on Stand and Bang, and his response was, sure, I've heard of that show.
So, of course, now you cheer for him all the time.
Well, no, I was just like, what the fuck you say? You've heard of the show. Only 18 people watch it a week. I can't believe Anthony Johnson's heard of the show, but maybe he was just being nice. But like you said, with Ben Saunders saying, hey, I like the Flying Brian logo. Of course, we work on these things. So yeah, that gives you a little charge and you're like, yay, I want Ben Saunders to win. And in my opinion, he did. So I'm really hoping that we can see him step up, because I do think somewhere in Ben Saunders is a good fighter.
Yeah, absolutely. Just think, if you got him a striking coach like Dwayne Bang on top of his Eddie Bravo ground skills, the dude would be frightening.
Right? Because he's so long and his kicks are very powerful. And I believe that he goes for the clinch, the tie clinch too much, and he wants those knees. But if he would actually just start following through with those nice long punches, get some footwork like our 135-pound champion TJ Dillashaw, think he could be scary. Now, let's go ahead and move to Danny Castillo versus Jim Miller. Now, this is a guy in Jim Miller, this was his 20th UFC fight, and Danny Castillo, this was his 21st fight under the Zuffa banner between WEC and UFC. These guys had a combined 41 performances in the UFC, which is amazing. You definitely don't get to see veterans like this that often. Now, I had picked Jim Miller, big fan of Jim Miller and Dan Miller. They were on Stand and Bang. They were funny as hell. They got a little bit tuned up on beer, started talking about all sorts of fun stuff. But I just like Jim Miller because he's gritty. He happens to be a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, which is great. I love the fact that he's dedicated like that. But when you go toe-to-toe with Jim, he's willing to trade. He's willing to take some damage. And then there's Danny Castillo. I don't care for Danny Castillo at all. That stupid headband that he wears and that he's over at Team Alpha Male, I just never really cared for him. But tonight, I tell you, I will tell you that I earned a little new respect for him. He was another one like TJ Dillashaw. He followed Bang Ludwig over to Colorado. And tonight, I don't know if you noticed this, but Danny Castillo can strike now.
Yeah, more than just one punch at a time anyway. He was really putting some footwork together tonight. In the past, he'd just throw one looping punch and then back off. But today he was putting them together.
You know, I noticed now on this one, and this was a split decision as well for Miller. Remember the lineup of judges that I told you about before?
Same guys?
No, this one has Sal D'Amato, Rick Winner, and Ryan Pasillo. So I'm kind of wondering when Sal, because Sal D'Amato's a good judge. I'm kind of wondering, I got to go back here, dude. Let's, okay, Sal D'Amato.
Going to look and see which one of these crazy bastards had it 30-27?
Well, yeah, well, that's the whole thing is I'm kind of like, okay, they just use all sorts of judges throughout the night on this one. You know, sometimes it was Rick Winner, Kevin Caldwell, and Brian Pusello. And then we go back to the Duke fight and Gabriel Sabatis is in there. And then by the time we get to Miller, it's Sal D'Amato, Rick Winner, and Brian Pusillo. I don't know. I was always under the kind of like the assumption that once you had your three judges at ringside, do they usually do that? Change them all the time?
Yeah, I do think that they're in rotation usually.
Okay. I guess I just never seen such a large rotation, I'm guessing, because it seems like Rick Winter and Brian Pusillo were always in there, but they're always switching out that one third guy. I don't know. I guess I'm trying to figure out some sort of conspiracy that isn't there. But what did you think about the fight with Jim Miller? Did you agree with the decision, or did you have Danny Castillo winning this one?
I picked Jim Miller, and on my podcast with Daniel Levy, we picked against each other on this one. So Daniel picked Castillo and I picked Jim Miller, so I was a little bit emotionally invested in this one as well, because Daniel Levy, everyone on the Twitter, they'll comment on my podcast and say how great Daniel Levy is, and the dude is phenomenal. But, you know, I hardly get any feedback, and I'm doing a lot of work here, so I was like, I want to beat this guy real bad. And so, yeah, I scored it for Jim. Even it was tight, but yeah, I gave it to Jim partially because of emotions and partially because I think that he really deserved it.
Well, I gave it to Miller because I thought he won. I mean, really, for all of the movement and the striking that Danny Castillo was doing, I just thought Jim Miller was more effective. I thought that when it went to the ground, Miller was generally on top and he was pursuing the finish more. When Castillo did have a dominant position on the ground, it just seemed like he was happy to just kind of take a rest or maybe just hold that position.
Get swept.
Yeah, does that seem fair?
Absolutely fair. Danny Castillo, he's a former, I'm pretty sure, Division I wrestler, if not Division I. He certainly was a collegiate wrestler. And where did those skills go?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where those skills went. Like I said, it looked more like he was happy to hold control and not really go for the win. So on that one, too, congratulations to Jim Miller. One of the reasons why I say congratulations to Jim Miller is I like these guys who have illustrious careers and a lot of fights, and he's only 31. So there is the possibility that Jim is not as good as he's going to get. So we saw an evolution in Danny Castillo. Perhaps we might see Jim Miller again, and we might see some new stuff from him. So I'm anxious to see him back in the cage. So,
Jim Miller, just think, this guy, if he were to move out of his home gym, he trains with at his home gym with his brother, as you mentioned before. Just think if he were to go to a high-profile camp with other 155-pound guys that are currently top tier.
That is kind of funny that you should mention that, because him and Dan are very proud of the Miller's brother's gym. And sometimes I question that when you do everything in a vacuum and you're doing it yourself. It seems like those guys just don't progress as far and as fast as the guys who are willing to branch out and go to top-tier gyms. So I seriously doubt I'm going to see that from either of the Miller brothers. I know Dan could use it desperately, and Jim would probably flourish, but I know that they got a lot of that hometown New Jersey pride. So why don't we go ahead and finish up the Fox prelims. John Volante versus Tom Lawler. Now, in this one, this was the only pick, Brian, that I got wrong tonight. As a matter of fact, this is the most successful I've ever predicted fights in the history of my life. We had Tom Lawler, who is a very small 205er, and he was coming off of a two-year layoff. And then we have John Volante, who just got done shellacking Corey Anderson. So I kind of thought that John coming over there from Sarah Longo's gym with Chris Weidman, his confidence was up. He's very big for the division. He's fought heavyweight. I just really thought he was going to steamroll Tom Lawler. And in the first round, it looked like I was right. The momentum was going his way. Lawler was holding his own, but John was dropping bombs, as it were. And then in the second round, left himself open for a beautiful right hook and slept him.
Yeah, this is the only time in my life I'm going to talk about my girlfriend on this podcast. John Volante won the first round, I think, pretty easy. Second round comes out, Tom Lawler puts him down, and my girlfriend says, "Oh no, I feel sorry for him. He was winning too." And you know, he's out cold or whatever, and she's feeling sorry for him, and at that moment I felt sorry for him a little bit too, but then I was like, whatever, you know, he's a fighter. He'll fight again. But the dude was obviously winning that fight, and then Tom Lawler, after it was over, in his post-fight speech, was like calling out the 205 division. And yeah, great knockout, Tom Lawler, but you were getting whooped by a guy that's definitely not top 10.
Well, yeah, and that whole, you know, that was a very set-up speech, and I love Joe Rogan. I absolutely do. Iconic, one of the most iconic guys in the UFC. If they ever lose him, it's going to be just a devastating blow. Tom Lawler comes out and he goes, "Everybody thinks I'm a joke, and now the joke's on you, 205, and blah, blah, blah." And Rogan's like, "Well, nobody thinks you're a joke, but that was a nice speech, Tom." Yeah. You know, it's just like, okay, real cool. But no, Tom Lawler's out of his mind. He's a top 20 guy at best at this point in his career. You know, he wasn't joking when he said he's getting a little bit up there in age, and dropping down to 185 is getting difficult for him. And unlike your girlfriend, who was sympathetic for John Volante, when he got hit with that right hand, I'm like, "No, what the fuck was that?" Yeah, you know what I mean? One of those moments where you're like, "Yes, I'm 100% right now in my fight picks." And then you start to see the demise with the one big shot, and you're like, "Oh, fuck you. The one time in my life I could have the claim to fame of being 100% right on a fight card." But, you know, John Volante is one of those guys, and we'll talk about this later, confidence plays a big issue. After the Corey Anderson fight, I think he had found his confidence. And now, after getting shellacked by Tom Lawler, I think we're going to see that confidence is snuffed, and they're going to have to hand him a can to crush before we see him doing any good business again.
For the rest of the card, I'd like to predict who you think is next for the rest of the winners of these fights. So what do you think's next for Tom Lawler?
Who do I think is next for Tom Lawler? Well, I can't say for sure which fighter at 205, but I would have to say somebody like a Corey Anderson. Somebody who is early in their development, somebody who's doing well. So if Tom Lawler wins, he can continue forward progression. But if he loses, the other person actually has the name recognition that, yeah, I beat Tom Lawler. Who do you got?
I'm not sure if this guy's got a dance partner yet, but what about John Volante? Not too long ago, lost to Fabio Maldonado, and currently, right now, Fabio Maldonado is right above John Volante on the UFC rankings. So I was thinking, if Fabio doesn't have a dance partner, we put Filthy and the Iron Hillbilly against each other.
Good Lord. You know, there is never a time in my life when I want to see Maldonado fight.
Well, I mean, at least it would stand and trade the whole time.
That's true. And, you know, it's first off, it's stand and bang. And I want to say something to Mike Goldberg out there, you fucker. It's stand and bang. Stop saying stand and trade. That doesn't even make any sense. What are they? They're trading something? Go to hell. But yeah, okay. I could see that. Tom Lawler just hilariously beating the shit out of Maldonado.
I don't know why people are so high on Fabio Maldonado. Always the best pure boxer in the UFC.
That's absolute bullshit. They say that time and time and time again about him. No, I don't think so at all.
I mean, he showed that skill against Hans Stringer. That's a pretty huge name to display your skills against, right?
No.
Not at all. Not at all. But yeah, no. I think that Filthy versus the Iron Hillbilly would be just a fine matchup.
Yeah, I definitely to get Tom's confidence up there and to let him crush a can, because I think Maldonado is just like, you know, just the biggest can in the 205-pound division. It's almost a gimme. So sure, why not? What the fuck? Let's go ahead and do that. Let's make that fight. So that's going to put the Fox prelims to bed, and we're going to go ahead over to the main card, which started with Takanori Gomi versus Joe Lozon. This fight pretty much went exactly like I thought it was going to, because even though Takanori Gomi has been fighting MMA for 108 years and I think has 10,000 fights, he's never learned to wrestle or defend any chokes whatsoever.
Yeah, he's really never evolved his game.
No, I mean, if you go back to 2009 when he won the Grand Prix and you watch the way that he strikes, the way that he wrestles, the way that he moves, it's exactly the same.
Yeah, just throwing those fireballs. I hated hearing Goldie talking about the throwing baseballs, but yeah, he just throws those fireballs.
Yeah, I don't know. It was terrible. This is exactly how I thought the fight would go. Gomi would try to reclaim some of the glory that he had from before. Lozon is definitely a more complete fighter. He would weather whatever storm, and as soon as he pulled Gomi to the ground, it was over. So
pretty much the exact instance that Joe Lozon latched onto that ankle, the fight ended like 15 seconds later by referee stoppage Joe Lozon himself.
Yeah, and that's what I want to say is noteworthy about this fight. Instead of going for the rear naked or submitting him, he just flattened him out and started punching him in the side of the face until he decided to stop. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. He just socked him like four hard times in his face and then looked over at Herb and was like, "What's up, fucker? I'm done." And walked away. And then Herb Dean was like, "That's not how it works. But yeah, okay." And then waved it off. Joe was about to U-turn and come back and give him some more, but then Herb Dean waved it off. In my experience, I've never seen anything like that before.
Man, Herb Dean's catching a lot of shit for his stoppages. Too early, too late. I was happy that Joe Lozon did that because the dude's eyes shut completely. His lights were off for my money, right? And then Joe Lozon goes to walk away. If he would have came back, that would have been terrible because Gomi was still just dazed and weirded out on the ground. He didn't need any more damage than that.
Well, no, definitely. And Gomi didn't argue either. That's one thing. Like, if that would have happened and Gomi, like, just snapped right up to his feet and was like, "What the fuck just happened?" But Gomi was completely happy with the fact that it was over. So that was a very interesting moment. And it also shows you that Joe's a pretty good quality character, because there's a lot of fighters, Brian, that we've seen. They know their opponent is out cold by a choke, or they've been knocked out, and they'll just keep on smashing him until the referee stops it. Lozon was just like, "You know what? This guy's had enough. He's out cold. Fuck it. Well done."
Probably the most famous time when a fighter decided that he wasn't going to stop.
Brian Stan. After...
I guess I'm not familiar with that one. Fill me in on that.
Brian Stan. let me see, what fight was it? Can I remember his opponent? I probably cannot. But he was in the, I believe he was in the guard of his opponent, and he hit him three hard times, and the guy's eyes rolled back in his head, and Brian Stan put his hands up like, whoa, and looked up at the referee, and the referee stopped the fight. But after he knew that his opponent was knocked out, he didn't strike anymore. Who are you thinking of?
Well, I was thinking of the opposite, of somebody that knew they were out but still hit them again. Dan Henderson, when he threw that H-bomb on Michael Bisping after Michael Bisping had already starched and laid on the ground, he hit him with that parallel to the ground H-bomb. Man, I mean,
that was revenge from the Ultimate Fighter. Michael Bisping couldn't keep his goddamn mouth shut. And you're absolutely right. That is the most famous after you've already been knocked out punishment, I think, in the UFC. And it made me giggle. I still, every time I see that highlight, I giggle. Not that I don't like Bisping. It's just that I really like Hendo. And that just shows you what kind of old school gritty guy he is. He's like, I told you I was going to shut your fucking mouth. It just wrecked him. So anything more to say left on the Fireball Kid and Joe Lauzon?
Well, what's next for Joe Lauzon, the winner of this fight? I would say I would like to put him up against Keith Peterson.
Keith Peterson. You are able to pull obscure fighters out of your ass a lot faster than I am. Who did Keith Peterson fight last?
No, Keith Peterson is a referee that seems like he's probably about 155 pounds.
Where are you coming up with these names, Keith Peterson? See, I knew that you'd start fucking with me eventually on this show. Oh, no, I know. He's a little fucking midgety tattooed guy, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. To me, he kind of looks like the lead singer of the Smashing Pumpkins, only a little smaller.
And a little chubbier, sure.
Yeah, but, you know, fuck, he probably looks like he's 155 pounds. Let's put him against Joe Lauzon next. Right, Joe Lauzon seems to have some pretty good referee skills, and Keith Peterson's not bad himself.
No, you know, what we should do is let Joe Lauzon be a guest referee every now and then, because he does seem to have better skills than some of them. There's one referee that I complain about all the time, and right now I'm not going to be able to bring his name to mind. So never mind. Let's just move on. But yeah, there we go. So Joe Lauzon, when you're done with your career, why don't you go ahead and put on the black gloves and the black pants, blank shirt, and you can be a ref. So, okay, now this is going to bring us to, well, one of three of my favorite fights. The entire main card for me was awesome. So there was a lot of people bitching about UFC Chicago. And to all you mouth breathers and assholes on Twitter and Facebook, just shut up. You're going to watch either way. So don't dissect the fights and tell me why you think they're bad before you actually watch the fights. Because in my opinion, this was a great fight. Brian, before I say my spiel, what did you think about Edson Barboza versus Paul Felder?
You know, I think that this fight ended up getting fight of the night, and I disagree with that. We'll talk about what I think was the fight of the night really shortly here. It was a fantastic Muay Thai stand-up striking battle. You know, you're from Stand and Bang.
Yep.
And so for your money, this was probably fucking incredible. But I feel like that Paul Felder threw too much spinning shit. And as for fight of the night, I feel like it needs to have some back-and-forth battling going on. Neither guy was ever in trouble in this fight. Neither guy, for me, was ever clearly winning this fight. And so, for my money, that would eliminate it from fight of the night candidacy. But, yeah, the fight was technically incredible.
Okay. Now, for me, I did think that Paul Felder, you went to that spinning back fist well a little bit too many times. And I mentioned this on Keyboard Warriors. Happens all the time. You'll get a guy who lands a great technique. And obviously, he starched Danny Castillo in his last fight with a spinning back fist. So now we're going to see Paul Felder twirling around like a fucking tornado all the time, trying to regain that glory. And it just didn't work for him. As a matter of fact, he missed it spectacularly a few times. But what this did for me was Edson Barboza is constantly being disparaged for having a suspect chin. Well, I'll be a son of a bitch if Paul Felder didn't hit him with a spinning back fist. He hit him with a couple of kicks. He hit him with some good straight punches. And as far as I could tell, Edson never wobbled. Did he look wobbly to you at any point in the fight?
Yeah, never, ever. And I'm going to talk about the Flying With Best Fight Picks podcast a whole bunch. But on that, I said that against Michael Johnson, Edson Barboza his chin seemed to be just fine. So maybe it was a couple of freak things. He had some bad weight cuts or something, but his chin was definitely there for this Paul Felder fight.
Absolutely. And Paul Felder, he was the definition of durable, except for that horrific spinning heel kick to the testicles.
Oh, fuck.
I'll tell you, I actually called bullshit at first because apparently my eyeballs are getting old and they don't track. they don't track speed as well as they used to. I thought it was to the inside of the thigh. Then, of course, they have to do super slow-mo, and you pretty much saw this guy's balls explode.
Oh, geez.
And I was just like, oh, my God, a spinning heel kick. And that's the, you know, that spinning heel kick is what killed Terry Hettem. Terry Hettem actually retired from life after that fight. So apparently Paul Felder has really strong testicles. But besides that, it was just a great fight. It was on display, and I agree that it was the fight of the night. Not so much because one guy clearly won or one guy clearly lost, but both of these guys just brought it. They were both durable. And I saw something in Paul Felder that I really liked. He's got a little bit of swagger. You know, he took the licks and got mad, came back harder, and did get sloppy by the third round. And I think that's what cost him the fight, is that he got a little bit emotional in there because Barbosa was staying tight. And he just wanted to hurt him back at the end. And I think that's why he lost that third round, in my opinion. But I you know, good things for Paul Felder. There's nothing like your first loss to make you a better fighter. And for Edson Barbosa, he kind of gets back on track being like one of the most dangerous guys at lightweight. So, Brian, since you are definitely more astute on this, you tell me who you would like next for both of these guys.
Actually, I was in preparation for this very show. I asked the Flying Squad on Twitter, who I try to engage with every single day of my life, but especially on fight card days, I asked them who they thought would be next for Edson Barbosa or who should be next. And I think I got 8 responses, and every single one said Anthony Showtime Pettis. So I guess that's what I'll say. That'd be a fun fight.
Absolutely. And for Paul Felder?
Shoot. Man, I haven't thought about who the losers should fight. Let's get him with a guy. We know that Danny Castillo used to be a wrestler.
Well, actually, but you know what? I actually have one for this.
Okay, who do you got?
The winner of Michael Johnson, Beneil Dariush.
Okay, yeah, I could see that. That'd be fun. And I'm going to go ahead and predict that fight right now. I think Michael Johnson wins that fight.
I do too. And so I think that for the next fight, since they're so close together, because I think Dariush and Michael Johnson are fighting in what, like 10 days or something? Less?
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'll believe you.
Yeah, it's early August. I know that. So that'll give them both time to rest. And so we would either end up with Dariush versus Felder or more than likely Michael Johnson versus Felder. And I think that that would be a great fight at 155. So Edson Barbosa versus Showtime? Sure. I could definitely see that. I think that that will answer a lot of questions about Showtime Pettis if he can't put away Edson Barbosa. And for Paul Felder, if he gets either Dariush or Michael Johnson, I think that's good for his career.
Michael Johnson fights Beneil Dariush on August the 8th, so that's probably in a couple of weeks. What if Edson Barbosa's chin is actually there? I feel like, you know, he might be Anthony Showtime Pettis. What do you think?
Yeah. No, I mean, RDA already showed what can happen if Pettis is up against a superior striker. Edson Barbosa only wilts under a great pressure, and Anthony Pettis is a guy who needs space to be good. So both of these guys need space to get their games off and to get relaxed. And honestly, I don't think at 155, I don't think there's a more technical striker, a Muay Thai striker, than Edson Barbosa. So I think that that would be a fantastic fight, as a matter of fact.
If it goes to the ground, though, I feel like Anthony Showtime Pettis would win that. But because Edson Barbosa is such a superior striker, maybe Anthony Showtime Pettis would get it in his mind that he'd have to beat him at that game. Basically, because we're talking about this fight so much, that's easily the one I want to see next.
All right, so that's it. I think those are both great fights. Let's get those booked. And that's going to bring us to the co-main event of the evening, Miesha Tate versus Jessica Eye, which I knew that this was going to be a blowout. Everybody, and you know, there's a lot of the hashtag I believe, and Jessica is very good at promoting herself because she has a lot of self-belief and her fans have a lot of belief in her, but that belief overshadows her skills. She really hasn't done anything in the UFC to impress me. Her one win that wasn't overturned for marijuana use was against Leslie Smith. And let's be honest, that fight was only ended because she delaminated her cauliflower ear. She didn't knock Leslie Smith out or submit her. She had a freak injury. Leslie Smith was all about it and was like, fuck it, let's keep fighting. I don't care if that fucker falls off. And the ref was like, no, we can't do that. That's gross. And, you know, the fight was stopped. And then Jessica is like, all right, Ronda Rousey next. How do you go from I mean, how do you go from Leslie Smith to Ronda Rousey land? That's insanity. And of course, the biggest gatekeeper to Ronda Rousey's who? Misha Tate. And people sleep on Tate all the time. I wish I could sleep on Tate right on those. Never mind. Sorry, I was about to go off into La La Land there, but people sleep on her. They're, I's going to be the one, and this one's going to be the one. She out-wrestles wrestlers, and she out-strikes strikers, except for Ronda Rousey, and that's no surprise, because the bantamweight division is Ronda Rousey and the rest. Do you know what I mean? And Misha Tate is the best of the rest. Without Ronda Rousey, there's no doubt in my mind that Misha Tate would be the bantamweight champion and probably hold on to that belt for quite a while. And then just like every other chick that's fought Misha Tate, when she puts her hands on you and all of a sudden you're on your ass, you saw Jessica Eye's will gone. What did you think of the fight?
Well, I'm going to talk about Jessica Eye first. I feel like most people that were picking Jessica Eye were doing so purely out of wishful thinking. They want a new contender for Ronda Rousey. I listened to the Stand and Bang podcast, which you are the host of all of the time, and I heard Dwayne Finley recently say that Jessica Eye was going to murder or, you know, whoop Misha Tate's ass, which obviously didn't happen. But I feel like, you know, he's friends with Stipe Miocic. He's from Ohio. Jessica Eye's from Ohio. So that was purely out of wishful thinking. A ton of people just don't want to see Misha Tate versus Ronda Rousey 3. And, you know, I kind of understand that, but you can't just randomly pick this person to beat Misha Tate because of that type of thing. The best win that Jessica Eye has on her record is Leslie Smith. And like you said, that was a cauliflower ear stoppage, which Leslie Smith said after that, it was in Mexico, she was saying, no me duelen, no me duelen, running around the cage saying that it didn't hurt. So obviously she wasn't banged up other than her ear exploding against Jessica Evil Eye. And then Misha Tate, for my money, is the second best women's bantamweight fighter in the world. I was corrected by Daniel Levy on my podcast that, well, Misha Tate lost to Kat Zingano, but that was 2 years ago. Right? Yeah, that was 2 years ago.
Right.
And also, a Kat Zingano, I'm putting her below Misha Tate because of the zero fight IQ that she brought into the cage with Ronda Rousey. So for me, it goes Ronda Rousey, Misha Tate, the rest. And it stayed that way in this fight.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, as soon as she dinged Eye, people just aren't expecting to be hit that hard. And I've told, you know, we talked about this off air, and I think we might have talked about this previously. For me, when you see a fighter wilt, it's always mentally. You know that fighter isn't going to be able to come back from the adversity. And I saw that in Jessica as soon as she hit her ass after that flurry of punches that put her down the first time. And going into that, or keeping with the theme of mental toughness or losing your mental toughness, why don't we go ahead and talk about the main event of the night? This is a rematch that we were looking forward to for 14 months. 14 months ago, TJ Dillashaw, guy from The Ultimate Fighter, takes on Henan Burrell, arguably the best fighter on earth, pound for pound, and he's a 135-pound champion, of course. Hasn't lost in almost 10 years, and in that 10 years has destroyed people. And here comes funny little TJ Dillashaw. Oh, isn't this cute? Burrell's going to destroy another Team Alpha Male guy, and we're all going to go home and have a beer or whatever. And then he clocks him with the one shot that puts him on ice skates, Burrell on ice skates, and then just puts on a striking clinic. We see different footwork from this guy than we ever have before. We see a confidence that we've never seen and striking that we've never seen. And now, of course, that he's the champion, there's always the MMA mathematician saying, oh, well, you know, it took him this long to take out Soto, and Anthony Berchek did it in 30 seconds, and this and that. And so finally, as it's getting closer and closer, more people are sleeping on TJ Dillashaw. Now, I don't know what you saw, Brian, but when I saw Burrell come to the cage tonight, he was already defeated.
Yeah, he definitely was already defeated. We talked about it off air that Henan Burrell was looking at the ground as he walked into the cage, you know, eyes down, tail between his legs type of thing. And yeah, he just wasn't mentally there from start to until he was finished.
Now, I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to you because I know that we talked about this one and we had the same opinion. Once the fight got started, what were you thinking about TJ Dillashaw's new look that he was given Burrell?
put your fucking hands up, guy. I just kept I just kept seeing shades of Anderson the Spider Silva versus Chris Weidman 1. Anderson's my favorite fighter, and I just kept seeing shades of that. Like, dude, I understand that you feel like you're the better striker in this and that you've already put him away once. That's not the same as Silva Weidman, but put your hands up, dude. I don't care how great you are with your striking. Put your hands up. You're not immortal. You're the champion. You've defended the belt one time, I'm pretty sure. Just put your hands up. I was pretty nervous about that. I didn't have any units on this fight. I did have Dillashaw in my counter move and my UFC pick'em, but after that first fight when he dropped Hennin, I've been a fan, and I just, like, put your hands up, man. Come on.
Yeah, the same thing. And I was like, what in the fuck is he doing? He's smiling and he's shucking and jiving and his hands are down by his hips. But he was cracking Barao. But I was thinking to myself, you know what? This cute asshole is going to catch a spinning heel kick or a hard straight right or something and get slept and look like a moron. And then as the fight went on more and more, I'm like, look at this kid. And, you know, just like Rogan said, not only is he the bantamweight champion now, but he's kind of put himself in the position where, I don't know if P for P already we got to start talking about, but he's not too far away from it. Do you agree with that?
For my money, I don't give a shit about pound for pound rankings. So, sure, put him in there.
Yeah, fuck it. He's the best. It depends on if you're talking to Rogan or Dana White, because everybody's the best pound for pound fighter when you ask those two stupid pricks what they think.
And the thing is, they're never going to fight each other.
Right.
We're never going to know anything about the pound for pound list, so it means nothing. So I don't care about it, for sure. TJ Dillashaw, best pound for pound fighter in the world.
There you go. Yep, exactly. He could beat Superman in a no kryptonite match.
Easy peasy.
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't make any difference. You're right. So fuck pound for pound, whatever the hell. But I will tell you this. He stole Barao's thunder. I'm trying to think of who can beat him at bantamweight, and there's only one guy, and his knees can't stay strong enough to let him fight.
Who's that?
Dominick Cruz.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What do you mean?
Man,
who's
I would
that?
Love to
Are
see that.
Are you serious right now? You pull these fucking obscure referees out of your ass. That's going to be the next Keith Peterson. And when I say that there's one bantamweight with bad knees that can beat him, you don't know I'm talking about Dominick Cruz. You're a cute cocksucker, aren't you?
Well, Brian? My mind went straight to Rafael Assuncao, and that's what I was thinking about when you were saying that. And I was like, I didn't think he had knee problems.
No, it's
but
ankle.
Because
isn't it his ankle that's been fucked up for 7 years?
He pulled out of his Hennin Barao fight with a rib injury.
Okay, but before that, wasn't it an ankle? Because I think we've been waiting for Rafael Assuncao to fight for what now, almost 2 years?
Quite some time, but I mean, he's already beat TJ Dillashaw, right? So that's where my mind went when you said one guy that could beat him.
Yeah, well, we have definitely seen that there are guys. I mean, Nate Diaz beat Donald Cerrone.
Yeah, that was Donald Cerrone's sixth fight in a year. Donald probably was drunk when that fight happened. Who knows
well,
what's going on there.
Well, besides that, he played Nate's game because he hated Nate, and rather than fighting smart, he fought angry. So we could definitely say that, all right, Rafael Assuncao beat TJ Dillashaw back then. Does he beat him now? That's a good question for you. What do you think, Fight Picks?
Well, I think that we'll probably see – I'd rather see Dominick Cruz first against TJ Dillashaw, but if not, I don't think that Assuncao could beat him a second time. What do you think?
No, I don't. With Assuncao's style, I think that TJ Dillashaw has evolved past Rafael being able to beat him. And like I said, I honestly believe at bantamweight, just like with Demetrius Johnson at micro atom weight or whatever the hell that little midget fights at bantamweight, I don't think there's anything from anybody except for Dominick Cruz. So Dominick, get healthy. And then we can see them do their mirroring footwork, because obviously Dwayne Ludwig took a look at Dominick Cruz and was like, I like that. That's what I'm going to teach everybody to do.
Yeah, that obviously works. That's, well, tonight Joe Rogan said that everyone needs to be implementing that style. And, you know, Joe Rogan says some pretty crazy shit, but that's pretty right.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's talk about a little bit of crazy shit, since this happened recently and we're doing the Flying Squad recap and all this. Now, you know Stitch is gone, right?
Yep.
And Stitch signed with World Series of Fighting.
Which was surprising. I thought he'd go Bellator, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, somebody must have offered them the right amount of money. So that was like kind of a big fuck you to the UFC after the big fuck you to Stitch. Now, I can't confirm this, but I'm pretty sure it's right off of Dana's timeline. He said something about Rogan showing up to the weigh-ins in that fucking Onnit shirt, and maybe he didn't get the picture or he didn't learn the lesson from hashtag Stitch. I'm telling you what, dude, if they fire Rogan or if they fuck around with Rogan, I'm done with the UFC. Or at least I'm going to say that I'm done with the UFC and then be a punk ass bitch and not be done with the UFC.
Yeah, I'd be a closet watcher. Dude, I talk about this on Twitter all the time with the Flying Squad. Who's your favorite UFC or MMA commentator? And for me, it's Joe Rogan. He took my MMA virginity, right? I started watching UFC with The Ultimate Fighter 1. He was the announcer of that. He's my favorite UFC announcer, and if they get rid of him, I'd be pretty pissed off. Well, I want to digress for a second. We'll come back to this. Henan Barrow had a sponsor on his shorts. Did you see that?
TNT.
Are they part of Reebok, or...
I have no idea what that meant on his shorts. I saw a close-up of that, and somebody was like, yo, Barrow, what's up with this? So can you confirm that that was a sponsor, or was that something else? Because I don't know what TNT is.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that is a company that used to be on his shorts for a sponsorship, but I don't know what they sell. Fucking probably dynamic fastening things, but yeah.
Or perhaps
I have no idea.
TNT, perhaps it is dynamite. I don't know what goes on over there in Brazil, but it would be embarrassing if he took a fucking fourth round shellacking and then still got fined the $20,000 for sneaking TNT on his shorts, because I'll bet you the sponsorship doesn't make up for that $20,000. Fine that he will get. And okay, since we already got the Stitch and the Joe Rogan thing out of the way real quick, before we wrap up, I want to talk about Herb Dean. Do you think that Henan Barrow owes him money?
He must, based on that stoppage of that fight, he must.
I counted 27 unanswered strikes. 27.
27.
Yeah, from the time that he rocked him after the leg kick, and it was obvious that it was over, TJ Dillashaw threw 27. He didn't hit him 27 times, but he threw 27 punches before Herb Dean pulled him off. Now, in my estimation, that is a late stoppage.
Shit, maybe Herb's got the yips still from when he stopped the fight early, Henan Barrow versus Uriah the California Kid Faber.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It just very strange. Joe Lauzon had to stop his own fight. TJ Dillashaw pretty much had to cause brain damage in Henan Barrow before Herb Dean would step in. Maybe Herb's just getting a little bit fucking sadistic in his old age. He's just like, you know what? I'm tired of all you pricks telling me that I stop fights early. I'm just going to let it go to the first UFC murder. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, kind of like reminds me of Anderson Silva back in the day. People said that he was finishing his fights too early. They didn't want to buy his pay-per-views. So then he put on a 5-round boring-ass shit. Maybe Herb Dean's going to the other side of the coin.
Yeah, he's gone to the dark side. He's like, you know what? I'm just tired of being bitched at. Go ahead, kill him. I don't care.
Kill him.
All right, Brian, is there anything else that you want to talk about in the old Flying Squad recap?
I think we pretty much covered everything other than just giving the card a grade, maybe a separate grade for the main card versus the prelims or card as a whole. Let's give it a grade.
Okay, for me, early prelims, C. Fox prelims, B+, and main card, A.
And that averages out too?
Well, I don't know, probably about a B.
Yeah, I'm on a B. I like to give the prelim portion a C. I'm going to go with a B- for the prelim portion that's on Fox. I never understand this, why we're calling it prelims versus main card when it's on the same damn channel. The only difference is they make me watch a half hour worth of trailer in between the fights. And then the main card, I'll give that a B+, averaging the whole thing out to, you know, if you were to take the grade that gives you a B-, and then just the next like 0.1 percentage and that style of B, a low B.
A low B. All right, I can get down with that. It wasn't the best card I've ever seen. There was some exciting fights, not the worst card I've ever seen. So, you know what? I want to say thank you very much tonight, Brian, for letting me be part of the show. We are going to get Fred Kirby on here for the next one, and we're going to start breaking down the weekend cards. So thank you very much. And everybody, thank you very much for listening. This has been the Flying Squad Recap. Anything you want to say before I let us go there, Brian?
Pimp your stuff, my friend.
Oh, sure. Pimp my stuff. Okay. I'm everywhere. This coming up weekend, I'm going to be guest hosting on the Hammer MMA, a Canadian MMA show. We're going to be doing the Ronda Rousey card. You can find that at thehammermma.com. Stan and Bang Radio, that is my show, Stan and Bang MMA Podcast. That's a weekly show where we have guests. This week coming up, we have John Wayne Parr, Muay Thai striker, going to sit down and talk with us for a half hour or so, maybe an hour, depending. And then, Brian, do you watch Keyboard Warriors?
I do watch the Keyboard Warriors. Like I said before, I'm a fan of you and Fred Kirby. I watch pretty much everything that you guys do.
All right, well, thank you. We got a YouTube show, just silliness. It's kind of where you get to see the more cynical, the dark side of me, Aaron Robbins, and Fred Kirby. We sit down with a guy named Eddie Law and sometimes another guy named Nick Pilecki, and it's a YouTube show. And, well, I guess accurately, we just shit on each other and shit on everything MMA. We do it in a funny way, though, and, of course, it's all satire. So if you want to watch any or all of those shows, I really appreciate it. And, Brian, thank you for letting me shamelessly plug.
Like we said before, we've talked about it on not on the air. We're not making any money on this, so plug all your stuff all you want every time that we're on the show. Thank you so much, Doc Robbins, for joining me and for being part of the Flying Squad.
Absolutely.
I can be found on @FlyingMMA on Twitter, FlyingMMA.com, any like social media website, type in that email address, like twitter.com/FlyingMMA, youtube.com/FlyingMMA, search FlyingMMA, that's me everywhere. And this is us, peacing out. Later, Flying Squad.